The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks very much for joining us here. You guys having a good time so far, Planet Comic Con?
Awesome.
I feel at home with all the geeks.
Sorry?
I finally feel at home, you know?
Finally feel at home, yes. Yes. This is a good atmosphere where we are of a kind here. My name is Jason Hunt. To my left, Mr. Dan Handley. We have built this as an H2O recording, one of our podcasts. Tim Harvey is normally in that show, but he had to work today. So Dan is very ably filling in.
We assume ably. I will do the best I can.
Yes, well, you have before, and I'm sure that your skills at digression are just as good as Tim's are. So basically what we do with this podcast, normally we are sitting inside of a basement with no audience. So this is going to be a little bit different. We might get a little interactive. I'm not sure. We'll see. Sci-Fi For Me Radio is a group of shows that we have over at scififorme.com, and you are more than welcome to join us over there or catch us on all of the different social media we're on. We're posting to those channels over the weekend, so you might find pictures of yourself posted in embarrassing places if you don't behave. No, I'm kidding. Okay,
then compromising positions.
Yeah, well, it may be compromising for us. All right, so the topic at hand. Normally, what we do is for when we're picking topics for the show. It generally is whatever is the news of the day, and certainly we'll address the death of Terry Pratchett at some point in the future, because I know Tim has been a big fan over the years. We want to get him in on that discussion. But today we want to talk about science fiction gone bad. And normally when we're talking about science fiction, we're talking about stories within the genre. We're talking about worlds and universes and writers and creators and the inside the story as it were. But what I want to do today is I want to step outside a little bit and get a little bit more into the real world aspects of science fiction and the fandom. Because back in the day, some of you may be old enough to remember back when science fiction was not chic. Science fiction was not kosher. It was not popular. And you know, nowadays we have the cosplay, I think, is probably in that same position in some respects as far as who's able to do what without being looked at funny. But back in the day, you know, if you were a science fiction fan, you were a Star Wars fan, a Star Trek fan, Battlestar Galactica fan, if you read Heinlein, if you read Bradbury, most people thought you were weird. I remember.
That's putting it mildly.
Yes. Well, I remember when I was in second grade. I was on the playground. I was Spider-Man, and I cannot tell you how many times I got beat up because I was Spider-Man. And nowadays, I don't know when we had the switch. I don't know if it was Tim Burton's Batman that helped with this transition. But now, science fiction is kind of cool. And I think we're encountering some growing pains within fandom and without from the social aspect. Because now it's cool to be a geek. It's cool to be a science fiction fan. And now you have two camps. You have the people who are the hardcore fans who have always been hardcore fans. And then you have the people who are now fans because it's cool to be fans. And you're starting to get that social stratification. And is science fiction as a genre going to survive the transition? And I think it will. But what I want to talk to you and feel free to jump in at any time here, Dan. But what we're looking at is the things like Gamergate and cosplay is not consent and the fake geek girl. You remember when that went around here for a few months a couple of years ago? It's these social cliques and you don't belong type of things that I want to address. And I want to see if anybody has experienced that kind of a thing. If you're looked at, or if people you know are looked at as being a fake geek, because you know now you've got shows like Lost, you have shows like Person of Interest, and different things that are not necessarily on the surface science fiction until they become science fiction, or you get something like Flash Forward, or Event,
and even those that just barely touch on the genre.
Yeah, there's some kind of a science fiction element that it's not a science fiction show. You know, like the Flash Forward, it was an FBI show, it was a cop show. Mm-hmm. But it had that science fiction twist that that somebody used to define it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, now it's almost as if all of these different shows out there have to have some kind of a science fiction element in it, whether it necessarily needs it or not. And I think fandom is reacting to some of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, are we closing ranks? Are we, because, you know, you see with the Hugo Awards, the big flap a couple of years ago, was it last year? There was this big controversy about who got nominated, and who's judging, who can host. You know.
Well, was it last year or the year before?
I think it was last year.
Last year.
And the infighting that's going on in science fiction fandom is troubling, mm-hmm. but I think it's normal.
I personally think a lot of that infighting in the fandom has been going on all along. I think now that it's more to the mainstream, it's become more obvious.
Well, see, I wonder if it's been that way all along, because I don't recall, and granted, the internet has probably done a lot to exacerbate all that.
Yes.
Let's stipulate that right there, because we did have a discussion a while back about how the internet is making us all stupid and rude. And I think that's the case in a lot of this as well, Gamergate especially. I'm not even going to go there. But
that was a nightmare.
The lack of a filter doesn't help. But on the flip side, you know, still on the internet side of things, you do have these ways for people to connect that never been able to before. And you have people of like minds, and you have people who are you know supportive of each other. And yes, you can wear whatever costume you want to wear, whether you look like that character or not. There's a lot of that that's going on as well. So there is some good. I don't want to paint a picture that says you know that. As fans, we're all terrible, terrible, evil people, and we're all going to die and go to hell. Because it's not like that. But
some on the, say the infighting, I mean, legendarily, you know, you
Star Trek or Star Wars.
Exactly.
That was the fight back then, right?
Late 70s, early 80s, we had that. I mean, that wasn't even necessarily the first infighting, but that was the first, that prominent one that I know of. But
well,
it hasn't stopped. I mean, Star Trek came out, you know. And then when Doctor Who stuff started coming over here, you had people who were the Who. Granted, Star Trek was an American show, and so you had a lot more Trekkie-based here as opposed to the Whovians. But the Whovians saw that as the original. That came first, you know.
Well, and I think, too, you know, Battlestar Galactica was a spoiler back then because, you know, it's a big copy of Star Wars. They're just copying Star Wars. But that was a little bit different. You know, the fights among which show was better is a lot different from you're not allowed to be a fan. And I think we get a lot more you're not allowed to be a fan now. JJ Trek. Good example of this. Everybody says, oh, well, it's rejuvenated the Star Trek franchise. Well...
Not exactly Star Trek.
Is that necessarily a good thing? See, because it says, you know, it'll get them interested in the original show. Well, the original show is nothing like J.J. Abrams' movie, so you're going to sit there and go, wait, am I watching the same thing? But, you know, Marvel movies being another example of that, where you have people that are fans of the films who have absolutely no idea who any of these characters are in comic books. They know who they are in the movies. Hey, that's Robert Downey Jr. He's cool, right? But they don't know Tony Stark from... Stephen Strange from Reed Richards. I
mean, yet.
They don't know yet. Yeah. Now, some of them are starting to pick up the comic books, and we're starting to see a little bit of that. But you've got, you know, 6-7 million people looking at the movie, and you got 300,000 people reading the comic book.
But I see the whole thing with the genre really exploding. I mean, it's kind of waxed and waned over the years. A lot of times it is what the media shows. You know, when we had the big space race in the 50s and 60s, yeah, a lot of the sci-fi was very popular. But I think one of the things that really made it more popular and more cool nowadays is the rise of the internet. Everybody's got computers, everybody's connected, and suddenly the geeks are running the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that culture, because it's touching everybody's lives, everybody starts getting the geek culture, and the stuff that us nerds and geeks like starts to also be picked up by the mainstream.
That's a good point. But I think the other thing, too, is, you know, you talk about the media influence. Given the state of the world as it is at the moment, and given the preponderance over the last few years of the dystopian future, I was reading an article on Popular Mechanics a few weeks ago, and Tim and I talked about this in a recent episode. The op-ed piece basically talking about how Star Trek The Next Generation was the last optimistic future that was presented in science fiction media, just in a broad sense. I mean, certainly you've had some books that come out that present a positive future, but for the most part, it's, you know, Divergent and Hunger Games and things like, you know, the Maze Runner.
And then the new DC universe, where they decided, you know, Marvel's doing so good with the true light-hearted comic type of thing. Let's go the other way. Let's make it dark and brooding.
Dark and gritty.
Hey, Superman's a happy character. Let's change that.
Well, even look at the Battlestar Galactica reboot. Dark and gritty, grim. It's you know, the dystopian future, and a lot of that could be, you know, the media painting pictures of the way the world is, the internet being the way it is. All of this, you know, I think all of this is this big cauldron of a lot of different elements, giving us this sense of the future is not bright anymore. And I think that also has played into the negativity that goes back and forth among fans, where mm-hmm. how dare you be a fan of what I'm a fan of, because you're not the same as me.
And a lot of times when we've reached that point, that is the perfect time for somebody to be a contrarian. The only problem mm-hmm. is I would look at other forms of media, like live performance. Let's look at, say, just to be a little weird, let's look at Broadway. All right. You look at what's, you know, it used to be Broadway shows were, you know, very original, very, very much so. You look at them nowadays, and they're pulling from movies, TV shows. Mm-hmm. They're rehashing older ideas. They're going to books and novels for their ideas. It's like,
and the movies are rebooting, and the
exactly,
TV shows are rebooting.
Movies are rebooting, and don't get me started on some of the reboots. But it's one of those things that it's. Maybe it's just the whole media as a whole, you know, the media companies as a whole, going after the almighty dollar, that they're trying to get on the bandwagon of what works, rather than wanting to be contrarians, rather than wanting to get out and say, well, maybe this will get some more money.
I think there's some of it, but I think some of it too is the, and I don't want to paint with a broad brush here, but it would feel like some of, and from the comments that I've read on some discussion boards and some different threads on Facebook and that kind of thing, it seems like that there are certain fans or people who claim to be fans who want to be the gatekeepers in terms of the fandom side of things, but also the science fiction in the genre itself, you know, being so dark and heavily influenced by Christopher Nolan and Frank Miller, everything has to be dark and gritty and realistic. That's the word, you know, realistic. Somehow, I don't know exactly how, but somehow realistic and dark and gritty started to become the same thing at some point, and I don't know.
No, they weren't the same thing. They just pretend
never
been
they're
the same thing.
Yeah, that's right. They pretend. And then you look at, Paul Newton pointed out when he was doing recaps of 12 Monkeys, he said, I'm watching 12 Monkeys, and there's a promo that comes on for Helix, and it looks exactly the same as 12 Monkeys. I didn't realize there was a promo for another show. You know, it's all starting to look the same. It's all starting to look dark. It's all starting to look grim. You know, Warehouse 13 is gone. Eureka is gone.
how many Star zombie Trek. Shows have there been, zombie
exactly.
movies,
Walking
how many vampires.
Dead and where's the optimistic science fiction? Where's the science fiction that encourages everybody to get along with everybody else? Is that gone? Or do we still have pockets of it anywhere? Have you guys been reading anything, any books, any novels, any comic books, seen any movies that basically say, hey, we're going to survive and it's going to be okay?
Well, looking at some of the, looking at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you're seeing a lot of the dark elements, which is
Battle
normal.
Zone. That's the new Marvel.
Yeah, but the thing is, for the most part, it's got the optimism, that type of thing, the heroes to look up to, that type of thing. And so that is almost a counterpoint. And, you know, you talk about people who are new into the science fiction. I will tell you, being specific to title, I would consider myself a Nubian, you know, rather than hardcore Nubian, Whovian. Because I knew about it. I wanted to watch it when I was a kid. I never got a chance to. It wasn't until literally 2012 that I actually got to start watching. It was Christmas Day. They ran the marathon. I started watching a few. Saw The Snowman as the first run episode that I got to see. Then I went on Netflix, and I caught up on the new series. I found the 96 movie online, and then I started going back to the old stuff and digging in. So I fit in with a lot of the Whovians, even though I'm brand new. And you talk about the Marvel. I grew up on comic books. Granted, I was way back when I was a little more DC than Marvel, but I still knew a lot about the Marvel. Now that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is out, my parents are interested in it. They sit and watch every episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. My sister, my brother-in-law, their kids are all into it. Would this have happened if it had not gone mainstream?
I don't think it would have, because otherwise, what have you got? You got the Corman Fantastic Four, you've got Nicholas Hammond as Spider-Man, you have Linda Carter's Wonder Woman. She looks great, but the stories were not great.
But at the time, that
at
was the
time.
Kind of,
that's
kind of
what we had. Yeah, but then you had the Incredible Hulk, which had some really great writing. It was a really good series. It was funny. We were doing an Echo Chamber podcast here not too long ago. Ellen Datlow was part of that. She's editor and does a lot of horror. But something that she said that she's noticed in the publishing world right now is, especially in the young adult series, dystopia is going away, and it is on the decline. I don't know if maybe the decline of reality TV might be having an impact.
And people are smartening up because of it.
Maybe finally we're finally getting tired of that kind of thing, and we want to do some scripted narrative. You know, sci-fi is claiming to want to get back to their roots and be a science fiction channel again with space opera and big budget miniseries. And so far, they're 0-2, I think.
They still have wrestling. Which
well,
is, which
I
is
think they're always
going to
have wrestling because wrestling makes money. But yeah, you look at something like Ascension. Ascension has so much potential, so much that it was like a spaceship out in space with people on the spaceship out in space. This is going to be good. Granted, it's drama, it's a soap opera. Okay, fine, but it's a spaceship. It's out in space. Then it turns out, no, it's not. It was very, very cynical in its tone. This assumption that these people could be so blind to their reality and confined in this experiment. Like, well, wait a minute. In 50 years, nobody's figured this out yet. Yeah, exactly. Nobody's going to check. There's just something that didn't quite work.
How were the ratings on that?
Not very good.
Exactly.
But it does show that they're at least open to making an effort, and I think that's a good sign. And I think when you look at the success of the Marvel brand, especially when you look at Guardians of the Galaxy, and now you have Star Wars Episode 7 coming out in December, that, I think, is going to be a game changer. If that movie is done right...
If it's
done right, I'm going to stipulate that.
Because we did see the prequel trilogies.
Well, to me, there's one Star Wars trilogy. And it started with Star Wars.
Yeah.
Episode 4.
No, it started with Star Wars.
That's right.
Because when I saw it in the theater, it was Star Wars.
Yes.
And the thing about Star Wars, the reason that it was such a game changer is because it was the popcorn flick. It was positive and upbeat. And yes, granted, it was as it was pointed out the other day, it was a dystopian future. You have an evil, oppressive empire destroying everybody that disagrees with.
Dystopian past.
Dystopian past.
Yes.
Long time ago.
But the tone of that was such that there was always hope. There was always a better future. They were fighting for a better future, and I think that influenced a number of films, and certainly you see the influence that Star Wars has on Guardians of the Galaxy being one of them, and the fact that they're making $1 billion, mm-hmm. somebody is going to look at that and go, maybe this upbeat, light, hopeful stuff might be something people watch.
I think one of the things that really made the original Star Wars trilogy work and why it was so positive and that type of thing is it wasn't really about, oh, this dystopian world with an empire, people fighting. It was about good versus evil, pure and simple.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and people can identify with that.
And good was supposed to win back then.
Exactly.
It wasn't always about understanding the villain. You know, nowadays we have to understand the villain because, the villain's a villain.
Villain's a villain. Yes.
He doesn't have to. I don't care what he had.
And when you have to make one of the greatest villains ever into a whiny teenager.
Wait, what are you talking about? When did that happen?
Let's pretend it didn't happen. Let's just pretend it didn't happen. There was no prequel.
Yeah.
There was no remastering of the original. Han shot first.
Yes. I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to say.
Never go full Lucas. That's good. I like that.
When episode 7 comes in December, and since we're already seeing the demise of the dystopian future in young adult, maybe in regular mainstream fiction, we'll start to see a little bit of a decline here as well. But I think with the success of Guardians, with the success of Star Wars, because it might make a little money. I think studios are going to sit there and go, okay, it's time. We can actually be a little bit more upbeat, positive now. Even though there are bad guys in the world, we can actually paint our villains as bad guys and have our heroes be heroes and maybe tell a different kind of story other than darkness. Right?
Absolutely.
I'm Batman.
But when you talk about, when it's gone mainstream, you get the new people who are not
they weren't the objects of ridicule when they weren't fans.
Exactly. Well,
and now they are fans. They are not the object of ridicule either because we've moved past it. Because now it's cool. Now it's okay.
Exactly. But a lot of times when you get people who argue, well, they're not genuine. They shouldn't be here. What you're getting are people who saw a way that they were unique and different.
This is
and
my
they
club.
Wanted to go against the mainstream. Essentially, they're part geek, part hipster. And when everybody starts going in, they panic.
Yes, this is the He-Man Woman's Haters Club.
Anymore.
Stay up, right?
I
think that's on. I hope it is.
I think, yeah.
It is, yes, it is. Give me your name and where you're from.
My name is Pam. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska.
Hi.
I work in a comic book shop. So I actually defend new fans to the system, because if we didn't have the new fans, we get more money in the system. So the potential is we will get some good stuff that us true believers want. But also, I was gonna say what you're saying about with all the newbie fans and all that. It's like they're like the bullies co-opting our part of the playground. It's like, mm-hmm. You know what? You weren't there. You weren't ridiculed. You didn't spend recess reading a book. You don't even know who Mercedes Lackey, Terry Pratchett, the holding list. You don't know who they are, so get out of my playground.
Right.
That's how I feel sometimes. But the new people do bring in money and more interest, and we are going to get those new the new Pratchett, the new, you know, Rowling, the new, somebody is going to go, oh my God, I can do this, and give us Asimov again, and, you know, yes. So it's a good thing, but it sucks too, because that's my playground.
Well, and you know, the funny thing is, you talk about, we were on that podcast with Ellen Datlow was there, Greg Cox was on that call as well. No, we're not going to talk about Twilight.
What's Twilight?
He mentioned, even then, back in the day, you know, there was the disagreement whether between Asimov and Heinlein. You're not writing real science fiction, you know. Even back then. So this has been going on for a long time. I just think it's just more noticeable now, and it's, you know, now that we've got, you know, the internet.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Catherine. I'm from Belton. Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Good.
I just want to say I'm part of the newer generation of geeks, nerds, fans, and all of us. We grew up, and as far as we were concerned, it was always mainstream. We grew up on the Saturday morning Batman, Spider-Man, X-Men cartoons. X-Men is how I learned ethics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So well, for and, us, and, it just, it's just, we missed out on the... You know, the kids that get bullied because you're reading comic books.
You didn't miss out on that, trust me.
No, well, I'm saying we didn't experience it. We so for us, it's just, this is just another cool thing we grew up with.
Exactly.
So,
I want to make sure that everybody understands. I'm not saying that the new fans are bad and not welcome. I think it's great that science fiction has gained such popularity and has got new people appreciating it. Because like they say, when you're talking about J.J. Trek, you know, it gets people interested in the rest of it, and they can see what the rest of it is.
And
you know, talking about Terry Pratchett passing away this weekend, that's going to get people talking about Terry Pratchett, and people are going to sit there and go, wait, a turtle? And somebody's going to want to read that book because they've never read Pratchett before. Somebody's going to read Pratchett because now he's dead. Mm-hmm. You know, same with Anne McCaffrey. Same with A.C. Crispin. You know, and it's on the one hand terrible that they have to die before somebody starts to read their books, but on the other hand, it's somebody new reading the old stuff.
Now, I want to throw in real quick. Somebody just thought about being that we were talking about, you know, the bully on the playground, that type of thing. Some of us older, I say older, I'm still a young guy, but nonetheless, older people know about. You know, there was some that's gone around on the internet that made a point. And as we all know, if you read it on the internet, it must be true.
Right? Exactly.
But so I don't know if it's true or not. But, you know, there was incident a long time back where there was this 16-year-old kid who got kicked out of school. Because he went up to some other boy, grabbed his comic book that he was reading, tore it up, and just reamed him for being a nerd, for reading it. That person was Robert Downey Jr. The comic book, The Invincible Iron Man.
And look where he is now.
And exactly. And now here's a guy who's done all these great things. He's done things like, you know, he played Charlie Chaplin. He was in Tropic Thunder. He did these great roles. What do we all know him as?
Iron Man.
Tony Stark.
Did you guys, we're going to digress here a second. Did you guys see the video of the bionic arm? Yeah. Did you see that? Wasn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm Andrea. I'm from Kansas City.
Hi.
And I wanted to mention, like, with younger fans, I think the problem with, like, stuff with, like, the when we were talking about the dystopian stuff, a lot of the times those are cash cows for teenagers. And unfortunately, I think the fear with teenagers being fans is that they don't stay loyal. Teenagers are very fickle. Mm-hmm. And, like, when I was going to school, like, Twilight was the big thing. And it was unfortunate for people like me that read Anne Rice and Bram Stoker and stuff like that, and it's like, no, these are real vampires. And unfortunately, it goes along with that, you can't be on my playground sort of deal.
Vampires don't sparkle.
Sparkle fire. Just glitter.
They die in the sunlight.
That's
thank
right.
you.
And it's kind of one of those things where, even then, I think that's why people get on the you can't be on my playground sort of thing, because we are so fond of these characters like Barnabas Collins or Vampira and people like that, because you get all these kids that are like, oh, you sparkle, that's your power, well, good for you, I guess. We got these peeps.
You mentioned Barnabas Collins. It's funny, because with the remakes, you know, all of these,
boo,
you know, that Dark Shadows remake. I mean, really? was that.
Tim Burton needs to retire.
But then you have then you have things like, well, now we're getting another Battlestar Galactica reboot in the movies. Yeah, you guys haven't heard about this?
Uh-oh.
Where have you been? You need to be paying attention to our website and reading our
SciFiForMe.com.
See how we get that plug in there real quick? Now, apparently Brian Singer has this idea for another version of Battlestar Galactica, and Universal is working on it, and it doesn't have anything to do with the TV show they just did. So, yeah, it's going to be a reboot of a reboot.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Miriam from Independence. But what I really want them to focus on is stories, good stories. A lot of the stuff today, they put too many explosions, too much crap. And I know that the special effects are important, and I know that that makes an interesting visual movie.
It keeps
Michael
Bay employed.
If you
right.
But if you go back a few decades, science fiction was storytelling.
Yes.
Star Trek, the original series, for those of us old enough to have watched it when it was on the first time, they had no budget for special effects. Special effects was an Enterprise on a string with a backdrop.
Well,
and we looked at the story they were telling.
Exactly, but you also consider who was writing Star Trek. Who was writing the original series? I mean, Robert Bloch, Theodore Sturgeon. You know, you had science fiction writers who weren't necessarily television writers. Granted, they'd be rewritten a lot. But the core idea of a lot of those episodes came from people who were writing science fiction all the time. And you're right, the ideas and the thoughts and the story, and yes, the story does matter. And granted, you know, the original series had its share of action sequences and battles and, you know, supercomputers that had to explode. But there weren't the base explosions like you see now. You're right. It's not Transformers. And yeah,
he's watching a movie sometimes, and then he'll watch a different movie. And from the room that I'm in, I can't tell that he's not watching the same movie.
Right. It's the same thing. Well, and I think part of it, too, and it's funny, the irony is I saw an interview with George Lucas one time. And it's from one of the documentaries that came out right around the time of Return of the Jedi. And he was talking about the importance of story rather than the special effects, the visual effects. And this is what makes it ironic. You'll appreciate this. He says, you know, when the visual effects become more important than the story, then you're in the wrong business. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But I wanted to say, Mr. Lucas, have you seen this? I'd like you to watch this, please.
You talk about the whole, all the explosions and that type of thing going on. Now, I'm an independent filmmaker. Actually, we both are here. And so I like to study up on you know, the art and the craft. I study not only directors that I like, I study directors that I don't like. Because I can actually learn some things from them.
Hey, Uwe Boll, don't be knocking Uwe Boll.
But here's the thing.
There
was a deal with Michael Bay.
Somebody gets it.
And he was talking about you want to make something look like it's really falling and convince the audience. A lot of times you take a tennis ball or something and you drop it to the ground so you can time it so you know the timing of the fall. But if you're going to slow it down for whatever reason, he's found that if you have all these different things going on the screen at the same time, you don't pay attention to the problem with physics.
Right.
And so, but the thing is, you start looking at things like Bay, you look at the almighty dollar end of it, and you look at what Michael Bay does. He does things like Pearl Harbor. People know what Pearl Harbor was. Of course, they're going to go see it, even when it's a bad movie. People know what the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are and the Transformers are. They know what they are. And so, essentially, he gets these properties that people know what they are.
Yep.
And he can just do a big bang, mindless whatever. He can shoot before he has a script or whatever, yep. And he'll make money.
For those of you who have never listened to our podcast, this is the portion of the show where we digress.
Yes.
And then we pull it back.
We do it a lot.
Now, I do want to mention real quick, and then we'll get to you. I do want to mention real quick that our H2O podcast is sponsored. And normally, we would take a break, and you would be able to hear a message from SuperheroStuff.com. But I'm just going to mention SuperheroStuff.com because they do sponsor our show, and we're very, very happy with that.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Okay, Tom, try it now.
SuperheroStuff.com.
One more time.
SuperheroStuff.com.
Well, we want them to visit SuperheroStuff.com. So maybe a little bigger.
SuperheroStuff.com.
There we go. That really gets in your head, doesn't it?
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker of Sci-Fi for Me here, just to give you a little reminder that our super smart crew members share their thoughts weekly on the DC shows Gotham, The Flash, and Arrow. Check out our podcast where we discuss these shows and story arcs, character development, plot twists, misses, and wins. Or if you'd rather check in for a quick recap read, we have you covered there as well. So join us for some DC-flavored morsels at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Podcasting is our superpower. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
We have just gotten a deal worked out with Amazing Stories magazine to rerun our H2O podcast, and that started this past Thursday. They dropped our first 15 episodes. Next week they'll do another 15 until they get caught up. They're going to run about 25 episodes behind us in repeats. So our podcast is going to be on the granddaddy of them all, and we're very excited about that because, you know, for those of you who know, Amazing Stories has been around since 1926. The Hugo Award is named for Hugo Gernsback, who founded Amazing Stories. We're very excited. It's a great opportunity for us, so you should check that out as well. And yes, sir.
I'm Preston. I'm from Olathe. On the, the superiority complex among nerds, I used to be one of them. And I can openly admit that, but I've found that one thing that's kind of gotten me away from that is this massive nostalgia kick we seem to be on media-wise.
Oh, yes.
I was watching one of the newer Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles shows, and they did like a collab where they brought like the incarnations from all different shows.
Turtles Forever.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
And then, well, those black and white guys came in, and I was like, what?
It was
what?
Eastman and Laird Turtles. Perfect.
I went and read the comic books.
Except they didn't cuss, drink, and kill people. But
yeah.
Otherwise, it was Eastman and Laird Turtles.
Name one other incarnation that can take out the Shredder in one comic book.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, you're going to see more of that. Now granted, and on the flip side of that, I just watched the pilot episode of Powers. And having never read the comic book, I knew kind of what to expect. I didn't know exactly what to expect, I'll admit, because I have fallen way behind in my comic book reading over the years because I got married and life and kids and job. And so I'm not into comic books as much as I used to be when I was younger. And when I watched the pilot of Powers, I thought, okay, this is a pretty good show, but I could do without the language because it makes it really grim, and it's something that I can't watch with my kid. And it's based on a comic book, and at some point, somebody's going to have my kid is going to want to pick up that comic book. You know, the DC animated pictures now under James Tucker, cannot watch with my kid anymore because of all the blood and the guts and the swearing, and now with the Suicide Squad, the sex. That's a cartoon with my superheroes. They're not my superheroes. Somebody else's superheroes, but I can't share that with my kid anymore. We watched the Flashpoint Paradox. And it's PG-13, and when we get done, my kid, who was 12 at the time, he looked at me and says, "You shouldn't have let me watch that."
Mm-hmm. Well, you got.
And that's a kick in the gut, because that's what my genre is doing right now. It's going dark, and it's doing that kind of thing to my heroes, and I can't share it with my kid, and that bothers me. But it's good to see that some of that is maybe swinging back.
Well, you look on that, you also look at the Power Rangers fan film that came out. And then but here's the thing. The ones who grew up on that are adults now.
Right.
You know, and then we look at, you know, when we were kids, when I was a kid, Saturday morning was sacred.
Mm-hmm.
That was cartoon time. Well, just within the last year, Vortex was the last remaining Saturday morning network block ended.
It's gone.
It's gone because, yep, you know, the time has changed. The cartoons, what we expect to be the cartoons to show to our kids nowadays, I don't have kids myself, but those that we would think of showing to kids, are not, that's not the audience anymore.
Right.
You'd have
to go to Cartoon Network.
Yeah,
Boomerang or Cartoon Network. Yep.
I'm Jolie from Independence, and I've been thinking about, you know, the new sci-fi is a lot being made for the new audience because that's what's making money.
Yes.
And my thing is, it's not being made for the old hardcore sci-fi fans, so my logic is then don't watch it. If you really don't like something that much, with the internet, it's really easy to go back and find the things you do watch and you do like, and maybe instead of thinking, well, you know, I was here first, so this new stuff, you're the one who has to prove yourself to me, maybe think, this isn't what, I'm not the general target audience, so I'll give it a try, and with an open mind, instead of comparing it to what happened in the past.
And we ran into that with the New 52. When DC rebooted with New 52 and relaunched it, it's a very good point, because what's playing out at DC Comics is a great example of how not to do it. Mm-hmm. My opinion, I'll say that. We take our digs at DC a lot because of I don't know what they're thinking. But when New 52 first came out, everybody thought it could be like an Ultimate Marvel. You know, a second thing. But it replaced what we had before. And now, you know, the reaction from the fans was, well, where's my stories? Where's my continuity? Okay, we'll give this a try. Oh, this is a crap story. This is not written well. This is terrible artwork. What are they doing to that character? Why is Barbara not in her wheelchair anymore? I mean, everything was changed. Everything was different. And editorial and all the creative types and everybody just kind of went, suck it up, deal with it. Your continuity is gone. And I think that tin ear that the powers that be at DC is what turned off a lot of people in the older crowd to say, you know, DC is going for the money. They're going for the younger readers. They're going for the new readers. And now there's nothing for us in the old guard. Where, if they had done it right, you could put that New 52 out there. You could put the new stuff out there. See what sells with brand new audience, brand new people coming into the comic book stores. And then, oh hey, you like this Batman run? Here, try this one. You like Andy Diggle's Green Arrow, try Denny O'Neill and mm-hmm. Neil Adams. You know, that kind of thing. Give them something that they can see both of. But, you know, our stuff is gone.
Well, on the New 52, I've said before...
And New 52's gone.
I've said before many times, I will say it again, that is the longest fifth week event I've ever seen... The history of comics, and it must die.
Well, and it is going to, because after Convergence is great, it got a brand new universe as well. I said before that New 52 was New Coke,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a piece of it. But I think also that we're in this transitory time where, you know, the fans are going at each other, the creatives are going at each other. Nobody quite knows exactly where we are. I think. And I think some of that has to do with the genre becoming mainstream more than it used to be, the influx of new fans, all of the different mix of combination of factors that are getting involved in this kind of thing. So I'm putting out this challenge to fandom in general. Anybody who listens to the show can spread this, because you know we have Will Wheaton's Law. And what I'm gonna say is everybody just kind of try to get along with everyone. You know, it's okay to be a geek. It's okay to be a fan, no matter how long you've been a fan, no matter what your favorite show is. And the genre itself will survive, but we do need to find that next Heinlein, Spider Robinson, Neil Gaiman, Terry Pratchett. Mm-hmm. Isaac Asimov, Ray Bradbury. We need those people to write stories. Maybe somebody in this room here is going to be the next Terry Pratchett. You know, maybe somebody in here is going to be the next Anne McCaffrey.
Something to think about.
Ray guns don't always have to go pew, 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 but you better fire first, right?
Yes.
Right? And you know, action sequences are just fine as much as the romance and the sparkly vampires, but
Well,
if he's an alien, he doesn't have to be a vampire, right?
Ninja Turtle.
Well, and we had talked about that the other day. If you look at the tropes of the genre, you know, science fiction, you talk about story being the main thing that's important everything. And I would agree with that. And it's something we talk about on the show a lot. Story, 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 story. Story comes first. And you have to have good characters. You have to have good stories. And whether it's science fiction or fantasy, it wouldn't matter because you can tell the same story, and the trappings can be different. Whether you're flying a spaceship or riding a dragon, you can tell the same kind of story as long as it's a good story. Mm-hmm. So, any of you have interest in writing, go write good stories. You know, and study the grandmasters. Study the old guard. Even if you're brand new to the genre, study the old stuff, because without the old stuff, there wouldn't be any new stuff. And we wouldn't be sitting here.
That's true. Good point.
I try to have them every now and then. When are we over? When are we done?
Still got 5 minutes.
We got 5 minutes? Well, yeah. We probably should go ahead and start wrapping this up. I'm going to invite all of you to... you've got a quote.
I mean, somebody who summed everything up in terms of the hipster geek versus everybody else. It's talking about filmmakers, but in genre, because it's Peter Gunn, James Gunn. Sorry, wrong thing here. But James Gunn, you know, was answering some of his critics, who, you know, these serious filmmakers, you know,
yes, film is art.
Hipster filmmakers, and he flat out said, if you think people who make superhero movies are dumb, come out and say we're dumb. But if you, as an independent filmmaker or a serious filmmaker, think you put more love into your characters than the Russo brothers do Captain America, or Joss Whedon does the Hulk, or I do a talking raccoon, you are simply mistaken.
And I think that applies throughout the genre. I mean, it's okay for us to be geeks, and if somebody points out, hey, you know, yeah, look at you, you're a geek. Yeah, I am, look at me, my industry's making billions of dollars. Where's yours? You know, just turn it right back around, you know. Our industry, our fandom is making bionic limbs. Mm-hmm. Our fandom is, you know, helping people walk, helping people see. You know, we put rocket ships in space. We put people on the moon. What have you got?
And they've already designed the first faster-than-light ship.
Yeah.
All they need is the antimatter.
That's right.
Okay. It is designed, ready to go.
There are theories for that. There are theories, yeah. And
they actually designed the ship.
Cool.
The theory works on a small scale. I can't remember the scientist's name, but there was a big write-up. And it's a magnetic propulsion that potentially moves the ship without having to have that great mass fuel.
Yeah, it's
exciting times sometimes.
It was Sonny White. It was Dr. Yeah. Harold Sonny White. Yeah. I got to interview him. He was very cool, but it was Miguel Alcubierre's formula for warp drive done in 94. Sorry, I'm science technology guy, but yeah. But yeah. Okay, it's basically his theory said you can travel at 10 times the speed of light, but it would take a force equal to the weight of Jupiter.
Yeah.
Well, what Sonny did was he took it just because they were having a conference. He wanted something new to do. So he just started throwing different numbers at it, see what. And he found a sweet spot where it would take the weight of a Ranger probe. It's definitely doable if they can get the antimatter. They've already got the ship designed.
Oh, it's just so cool. I cannot.
It is cool. And that's the other. That's one of the other benefits, you know, why it's cool to be a fan as we are, because, you know, you look at somebody like Dr. Mae Jemison, you know, who became an astronaut because she watched Star Trek, and then ended up on Star Trek because she was an astronaut. I mean, it's
yes.
Mind-blowing, right? Those kind of things are things that we should be encouraging, and we should be, you know, patting everybody on the back for doing those kind of accomplishments and really supporting, you know, and getting behind that kind of thing. Speaking of support, I'm going to ask for yours. We are on Facebook. SciFiForMe.com is on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Pinterest. We're on Twitter. We're on Google+. We're on YouTube. We're on Tumblr. All of our podcasts are available on iTunes, and if you're on an Android device, you can find us through Double Twist. God, I never can get
you
that
need
right.
The card in front of you, don't you?
Even with the card, I never get it right. Double Twist, OneCast, or Stitcher are the apps that you can use on an Android device that you can find. Just look for Sci-Fi For Me Radio for the podcast. And then, of course, SciFiForMe.com. We're posting articles there, daily as much as we can. And we do encourage the feedback. You know, leave comments and send us emails and post on our Facebook and stuff. We do like having the conversation. So you're welcome to join us over there and encourage your friends if they're fans as well to check us out. And that's going to do it for us. And I do thank you for listening. There's Dan Hanley. And I'm Jason Hunt.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Planet Comcast is going to be a big thing this year.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is SciFiForMe Radio.